Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news. Stand by now for the Worldview. And happy Resurrection Sunday to all of you out there. Welcome back to the show where we don't take ourselves all that seriously. We don't tolerate commercial sponsorship. We'll have none of that around here. But we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's good to be with you on Resurrection Sunday. I was out celebrating the resurrection today. Well, first by skipping church. Skip church. Yep, that's right. Skip church and instead worked on my fence, which the wind blew down. Anyway, the neighbor's dog was taking advantage of our backyard, leaving DNA samples all around, and then went petitioning with my two daughters, Nicole and Zoe. Zoe got her first personhood petition signature. And Nicole, of course, is an old SALT veteran. But we're at, as a group, we're at about 260 signatures so far. And we're just getting started. And we're doing the math today, trying to figure. We need 500 people to go out and get 200 signatures each. Right? Does that work? Does that work? Yeah, that would be about 100,000. So I'm hoping there's 500 people that are motivated like myself here as we march toward the ballot here in Colorado. I want to encourage anyone who's out there doing petitioning to get on out there and get 100, get a couple hundred. And let's just get this thing done. And I had a great opportunity, a couple of great opportunities today to witness about Jesus Christ to people while I was petitioning. People who were confused about whether or not every innocent person is created in the image and likeness of the living God and has an inherent right to life, and that it is the duty of us as citizens, and especially of the government, to protect and defend that right. Had a few really nice conversations, and just glad to be doing it. Good time was had by all, except for the pro-aborts. A few of them were quite uncomfortable. It's hard to say you're against, it's hard to say that you're pro-choice in front of a 10-year-old and a 5-year-old girl. They rather just avert their eyes and walk on. But anyway, we've been having a good time out here, and we've got to get to the news, unfortunately. And we're going to start at the Waffle House. Yeah. This is Dateline Augusta, Georgia from WRDW. Investigators have arrested a female they say opened fire at a Waffle House early on Friday morning. Shots were fired outside a Waffle House in Augusta, Georgia. Just before 5 a.m., deputies responded and found two groups of females involved in the shooting fracas. Apparently, one female fired four shots in the air with a handgun. Investigators think the argument stemmed from a post on Facebook. They believe it might be related to a relationship status. Do you have any idea what any of that means? I'm asking my extremely attractive audio engineer. She has no idea. She's one of the five people on the planet left who don't have Facebook. Anyway, what I believe happened, my dear, is that one of the females updated her relationship status with one of the other females' boyfriends. That's probably what happened here. And fortunately, this woman only fired shots in the air. No one was hurt. And the Waffle House, well, they just went on cooking waffles. And, you know, the Waffle House, I don't even think they closed the Waffle House. Because shots fired at a Waffle House is just not that unusual. No reason to close the place. All right. But let's get to serious news. We'll go to the domestic tranquility file. This is from CNS News from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The mayor out there of Philadelphia, his name is Michael Nutter. We've quoted him a number of times on the broadcast. And he told a youth violence prevention forum in Washington last Monday that he said, tainted foods get more attention than young people killing each other. He said, if there were five bad bags of spinach on the shelf somewhere, someone would put out a national alert. Every bag of spinach would be snatched off the shelves until someone figured out where they came from, what was going on, and there would be a national investigation. But, says Michael Nutter, mayor of Philadelphia, there is no national investigation about this issue, that black people are killing black people all across the United States. And I would remind Mr. Nutter that we've got white people killing white people, black people killing white people killing black people, Mexicans killing Asians, Asians killing Mexicans and black people. Is there anyone I missed? And Native Americans. Anyway, we've been covering it extensively on this show for the past 10 years on and off, Mayor Nutter, but we sure appreciate Mayor Nutter standing up and noting the incongruity of the press coverage as it relates to the bloodshed, murder in the streets of America, and tainted spinach and whatnot. He makes a very good point. Now, Mayor Nutter noted that homicide is the leading cause of death for black men between the ages of 16 and 34, and in Philadelphia last year, 75% of the city's 316 murder victims were black men, and 80% of the arrests involved black men. Mayor Nutter says, quote, "But the fact of the matter is, unfortunately, many African-American boys are killed in America each and every day, most of which are never going to be on CNN or MSNBC, most likely not even on the local news where the murders occur," unquote. And it's sad but true, because there's just not enough, there's not enough column space in the newspaper, and there's not enough broadcast time in the day to cover every murder, whether black, white, brown, or yellow, as they take place across the country, as the national epidemic of violent crime continues unabated. So Mayor Nutter says, "I think we need to have a serious conversation, not only about Trayvon Martin, but the thousands of people who are killed all across the United States of America, black, white, Latino, Asian, everybody else. It is a serious national issue that deserves a serious national discussion." Bravo, Mayor Nutter. I'm sure we disagree on a lot of issues, but I will give Mayor Nutter his due. At CNS News reports that the two-day youth violence prevention conference organized by the Justice Department includes various cabinet secretaries as well as delegations from Chicago, Boston, Memphis, Detroit, San Jose, and Salinas, California. And I might remind you people that each of these cities, ankle deep in the blood of the innocent, all these delegations from these cities, they're all unqualified to be in charge. And as a result, people are dying every day because we have the unqualified have assumed control, especially in the larger metropolitan areas. Mayor Nutter, I hope it's just not smoke in a windstorm here with your comments. I hope someone will start paying attention to the state of domestic tranquility in America, as we've been sounding the alarm for a number of years. More from the domestic tranquility file. This is from the Associated Press. Six students and one employee were killed when a gunman opened fire at a Christian-based school, the Oikos University in Oakland, California, last Monday. Three other people were wounded. This article goes on to talk about the diversity of the victims. And it talks about the Asian that got killed and the black girl and the Hispanic person. I don't know. Are we keeping track by race these days? Because obviously, how many people were killed here? Let me see here. Six students and one employee were killed. That's seven people. That's barely enough to crack the national news, unless we put in the ingredient of discussing the race of the people killed, and I just don't get it. It really doesn't matter to me what the race of the murder victim is, what the race of the murderer is. What really needs to grab our attention is the fact that this is happening every day. And perhaps the Trayvon Martin case will help. No, I don't think so. I really don't think. I think it's going to exacerbate racial tensions, and I think that's purposeful on the part of those race hustlers who are working to escalate tensions. And maybe Barry Ho thinks that's his only hope to get back into the White House, is to exacerbate racial and tensions and economic jealousy. Perhaps that's his election strategy, and that happens to fit in well with the machinations of the progressive ruling class. And so the national media, the mainstream media, as we like to call them, because I think they all have to be on drugs. The Democratic Party and the mainstream media all find common ground in the Trayvon Martin story, and they continue to use it to divide us and draw attention away from the fact that the folks in the mainstream media are unqualified to report, and the governing officials in the progressive ruling class are unqualified to govern. And the question is, are we going to be fooled? Are you people going to be fooled? I hope you're not one of the fools. All right. Now, speaking of Barry getting back into the White House, let's go down to Arizona. This is a Reuters story. The Obama administration has said it is preparing to sue Arizona County Sheriff Joe Arpaio and his department for violating civil rights laws. Yeah, the Ho administration's Justice Department and the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office have been in settlement talks for months over allegations that officers regularly made unlawful stops and arrests of Latinos. They used excessive force against them and failed to adequately protect the Hispanic community. Well, if all these accusations are true, Mr. Ho and Mr. Holder, why would you be in settlement talks? You would think you would have indicted Mr. Arpaio, taken him to trial, civil or criminal. Well, according to this article from Reuters, the settlement negotiations have broken down because of a fight over the Justice Department's demand that an independent monitor be appointed by a federal court to oversee compliance with the settlement, which has now reached 128 pages. So they want to send in a commissar. It's like the Soviet Union in the 1970s. Every company, every government office had a commissar. Remember the song? Don't look around, uh-oh. The commissar's in town, uh-oh. You remember that one? Vaguely? Anyway. So the commissar was basically a representative of the party. And we are just here to make sure that you are towing the party line. And Mr. Obama wants to send his commissar down into Joe Arpaio's sheriff's department. And Mr. Arpaio apparently is having none of that. By the way, Mr. Arpaio has an active investigation going on to find out if Barry Ho's Selective Service Registration, his birth certificate, his Social Security number. Joe thinks there's good reason to believe they're all fake, fraud, yeah. Coincidence, you think? That now that settlement talks have broken down, it looks like Eric Holder's going to bring civil action against Mr. Arpaio. Well, in a strongly worded statement last Tuesday, Sheriff Arpaio said the appointment of a commissar would force him to abdicate responsibility for his police force. I injected the word commissar, by the way. He called him a monitor. I call him a commissar. He said, quote, to the Obama administration, who is attempting to strong-arm me into submission, only for its political gain, I say this will not happen, not on my watch, as Eric Holder prepares for legal action. And I looked it up. I found out that Joe Arpaio is Italian. He's not a Mexican. So he's obviously a racist. Yeah. I said, ironically. Not seriously. Anyway, I'm with Joe on that whole thing. Was that the closest thing you had to the commissar? I mean, it has some O-O's in there. Well, now he goes on to I. And it has a bit of a Caribbean. I think the name of the song is Jamaica, which is it's a play on words. Anyway, I don't want to get into explaining all of that. And is it racist for you to play something with a Jamaican flavor after doing a story about the racist Italian? That could be considered racist. And they're British, you know, which, okay, I've probably gone too far with the whole racist thing. Anyway, it's just bothering me that every time I turn on the news or the radio, I'm just hearing racial tensions being escalated, and now we've got, I know there was a shooting in Tulsa. I haven't been on top of the news. I've been working a lot. But there's been some shootings in Tulsa that are now going to dominate the news cycle, and I think it's just unfortunate that under our post-racial president that these things are going on. And I think it belies the truth about the motivations of Barry and his minions and all of those folks. But let's talk about something that's less of a threat than the progressive ruling class, but a considerable threat nonetheless. Let's talk about Hezbollah. Are you familiar with Hezbollah? I believe it loosely translated, it means the army of Satan. Hezbollah, this is from Reuters. There was a warning last month from Representative Peter King, the chairman of the House of Representatives Committee on Homeland Security, and the warning was blunt. An investigation by Peter King's staff has determined that hundreds of people he described as Iranian and Hezbollah terrorists are in the United States right now as we speak. Now, U.S. officials in the Ho administration caution that Hezbollah, which is a Shiite militia based in Lebanon, well, they say that Hezbollah has largely avoided attacking U.S. targets since it carried out the bombings in the late 80s against the U.S. embassy and the Marine barracks in Beirut. One reason may be that it does not want to endanger its lucrative North American fundraising operations. So my first question is, who do you believe? Peter King or minions in the Barry Ho administration? Well, I'm going to go with Peter King on this, and I'm a little nervous about all these Hezbollah fundraisers here in the United States. And of course, my second question would be, what do you mean fundraisers? I thought it was illegal to fundraise for Hezbollah in the United States, but apparently there's selective enforcement of certain things. Not sure why we're allowing fundraising to occur here in the United States. That makes me a little nervous. Let's see. According to the article from Reuters, an Israeli or U.S. strike on Iran's nuclear sites could prompt Hezbollah to change its strategy, moving from surveillance and fundraising in North America to launching retaliatory strikes right here in America. Now, intelligence and law enforcement officials, along with private experts, say there's little doubt Hezbollah has an extensive network of supporters, fundraisers, and potential operatives here in the United States. The New York Police Department believes that between 200 and 300 Hezbollah sympathizers live right there in New York City, and 10 and maybe as many as 20 of those are relatives of Hezbollah leaders or fighters who have been killed in action by our troops. Yeah, I know they're not as direct a threat as Barry Ho and them, but it is something worth concerning yourself with. According to Reuters, pinpointing the number of Hezbollah operatives inside the United States is difficult. The committee report nonetheless cited the estimates of some officials that the group likely has several thousand sympathetic donors in the United States, as well as hundreds of operatives. But don't be too nervous, folks. Barry Ho administration officials, they say that there's a big difference between a Hezbollah supporter and someone who would be willing to engage in violent activity. Yeah, and I'm sure that's true. There is some difference. There is a slight difference. Most people don't want to carry out violent acts. They would much rather just give money to the people who will actually carry out those acts. But the bottom line is, we haven't kept a very good track of how many Hezbollah operatives are here. And, it's something to be concerned about. Here's an example of a Hezbollah operative right here in the United States. This is from the Jerusalem Post, Dateline, New York City. Longtime White House reporter Helen Thomas has received a prize in journalism from a representative of Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas. Yes. Helen Thomas was recognized for her journalism career and commitment to the Palestinian cause. You remember Helen Thomas. She was the one who said the Jews should get the hell out of Palestine. Go home. Go back to Poland. Go back to Germany. Yeah, you remember Helen. And, of course, that gets her an award with the Palestinian Authority there. Hopefully the FBI is keeping tabs on her. Not only who she's funding, but who she's meeting. And, I mean, she's 91. If she's true to the cause, maybe Helen Thomas will strap a bomb to herself. You never know, right? I mean, there is a difference between a supporter and someone willing to carry out violent acts. And Helen Thomas is probably walking that fine line every day. Disgusting woman. Now, speaking of disgusting, let's get to this Keith Olbermann story. Last Friday, according to the Associated Press, Current TV announced it was immediately replacing Keith Olbermann's show with a new program hosted by former New York Governor Eliot Spitzer. Wasn't he ran out of town on a rail for basically being a pervert? Now he's got a show. He's replacing Keith Olbermann. So that can't be very good for Olbermann's self-esteem to know he's getting replaced by Eliot Spitzer. I mean, how bad do you have to be? Anyway, Al Gore, co-founder of Current TV, along with Joel Hyatt, said that their relationship with Olbermann no longer reflected respect and other values. Yeah. No definition as to what those other values were. I don't know. It's just nice to see Keith Olbermann get fired. He had a 5-year, $50 million contract. How could Current TV have a $50 million contract with anybody? Has anyone ever watched Current TV? Do we even have that capability to select that on our...
I don't know.
I have no idea. Anyway, but someone gave him $50 million. Well, Keith's going to take Current TV to court and try to get his $50 million. He calls himself a million-dollar chandelier without a home.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's interesting that he's comparing himself to a household utensil. Because, you know, that's probably appropriate. But a million-dollar chandelier? Oh, no, a $10 million chandelier. He says if you buy a $10 million chandelier, you should have a house to put it in. Implying that Current TV was simply not up to the high standards of Keith Olbermann, who no doubt is going to find himself within 18 months living under a bridge unless he gets his money out of Current TV, because Mr. Olbermann's broadcasting days, I think, have come to a close. Thank you, Mr. Olbermann. Exit stage left. Yes. Very good. Okay. Now, speaking of Keith Olbermann, let's go to Caracas, Venezuela, and talk about Hugo Chavez, one of Olbermann's most revered political leaders. Let's see, it's from the Wall Street Journal. Concern about Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez's health grew last week amid reports the cancer-stricken leader will seek emergency medical care in Brazil. And the rumor started a day after President Chavez broke down during a religious service and begged Jesus Christ to grant him life. That's right. Hugo Chavez broke down in tears and prayed in the name of Jesus Christ. Now, Hugo Chavez is a lifelong communist, dictator, a murderer, and a thief. And this is another example of the old axiom that my pastor put forward many years ago, that the death penalty works. Yes. Hugo Chavez is on the verge of meeting Jesus Christ. And so suddenly, he has a whole new perspective on what really matters. And he prayed in public at this event. He said, "Give me life,
Even if it's a life in flames or in pain, it doesn't matter. Please give me life, Jesus. Hugo Chavez, yeah. Praying publicly to Jesus Christ. Who knows? Actually, I guess it was God that put forward the axiom that the death penalty works. My pastor just reiterated it. Did a good job of it, though. But anyway, Jesus Christ suddenly has Mr. Chavez's attention. And, it could only be good for Mr. Chavez. It would be good that if he repented before he drops dead, and we hope he drops dead soon. And I mean that sincerely. And when he does die, unless there's fairly obvious evidence that he did repent, I shall speak ill of him. I always break the rule, never speak ill of the dead. Because if I'm going to speak ill of you while you're living, wouldn't it be hypocritical of me to not speak ill of you or to pay lip service to you after you're dead? It's like, who's that atheist writer who died recently? The guy with the cancer? I can't remember his name. Hitchens, Christopher Hitchens. I spoke badly about him when he was living. I spoke poorly about him while he was dying. And upon his death, I spoke ill of him. Just because I'm not a hypocrite, at least not in that respect. All right. Now, from ailing dictators to multimillionaire phony balonies, let's talk about Donald Trump. This is from the Culture File. This is a disturbing and fairly disgusting story, but I feel like I have to address it. Donald Trump, according to the Palm Beach Post, has declared that a transvestite can compete for Canada's spot in the Miss Universe pageant. At which point all the Canadians are looking at each other going, what did he just say, eh? What? Did he say transvestite, eh? No way. Anyway, I apologize to our Canadian listeners, but this is what it is. Canada is going to put forth a tranny for the Miss Universe pageant. I mean, and Donald Trump, well, he runs the Miss Universe organization, according to the Palm Beach Post. He issued a statement last week wishing the transvestite who calls himself Jenna Talakova, he wishes her the best of luck in her quest for the crown. That's Donald Trump wishing the transvestite the best of... The tranny was represented by Gloria Allred. And apparently Gloria, one of the few people on the planet able to back down Donald Trump. Although, probably Donald didn't need much pushing. I don't know how anyone ever got the idea that Donald Trump was a conservative or a Republican or anything like that. And this just gives lie to that fact. I mean, he is what he is. Let's see. The Miss Universe organization said that Mr. Talakova could enter the pageant, quote, provided she meets the legal gender recognition requirements of Canada and the standards established by other international competitions. That was their original. They basically said she needs to be a natural-born woman. And apparently there's no solid definition in Canada for what a natural-born woman means. You know, it's like the debate over Barry Ho and his birth certificate. Well, what exactly is a natural-born citizen? And, of course, there can be some debate about what a natural-born citizen is because it's sort of a gray area. What is a natural-born citizen? I mean, I can see people debating that. But I think it's fairly obvious what a natural-born female or male is. I mean, isn't it? Fairly obvious. Anyway, Mr. Talakova is a Vancouver resident, and he underwent a sex change operation 4 years ago after being born a male. Being born a male like 20-some years, 23 years ago. Mr. Talakova, we believe, is a natural-born male. We don't know about his citizenship, whether or not he's Canadian, or whether they're going to look into that. Anyway, Mr. Talakova's sex change initially led organizers in Canada to disqualify her from the Miss Universe Canada pageant back in May, citing the rule that she must be naturally born a woman. Well, Talakova said last week, quote, I am a woman. I was devastated, and I felt felt that excluding me for the reason that they gave was unjust. I have never asked for any special consideration. I only want to compete. Mr. Talakova, asking that you, a boy, be allowed to compete against women in the Miss Universe pageant is quite possibly the definition of asking for special treatment. Talk about deluded and completely self-absorbed. Well, Talakova went and hired Gloria Allred, and they both urged Trump to state that she can compete and represent Canada in the Miss Universe contest. And they have also called on Trump to eliminate the rule altogether. Yes. In response, pageant organizers issued a statement saying, Gloria Allred's statements to the press pay no mind to the fact that Mr. Trump and Miss Universe organization made the fair and just decision in allowing Mr. Talakova, to compete in the Miss Universe Canada pageant. They say they're evaluating their rules to ensure that this type of issue does not occur again. Allred said, there is no need to further evaluate. The rule is blatantly discriminatory, and it's time for Mr. Trump to say that he will get rid of the rule. She's got the jack. 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 She's got So are you implying that Ms. Allred has the jack or Mr. Talakova? That's true. There is only one woman involved in this story. It's not Mr. Trump and it's not Mr. Talakova. That leaves you, Gloria. Oh, man. Disgusting. Donald Trump. Can you believe that? Anyway, can't say that we're surprised. But we can say that we are relatively disgusted. And I've never watched the Miss Universe pageant. I've never been a pageant type of person. Do men watch pageants, or is that a woman thing?
I don't watch.
Oh, is that sexist to even ask that question? I apologize, ladies and gentlemen.
I think I'm a woman, but I don't watch it.
You think you're a woman?
I'm not sure.
I think you're a woman.
I think I was born.
Anyway, I've never been attracted to that whole situation. It kind of creeps me out. Anyway, most of the women in those pageants, aren't they, heavily surgically altered anyways?
They don't look like that.
Yeah, they look, I mean, this, I saw the pictures of Mr. Talakova.
Yeah, they look same.
And he looks just like any of the other surgically altered, prepackaged, manufactured contestants.
He might get a job at the Fox
station. Yeah, that's true. Probably host a show on Fox once the pageant's over. Mr. Talakova can sit next to the other shemales that dominate Fox News. Isn't that kind of creepy that Fox has all these square-jawed women? I don't know. I saw, who did we see last night? Who was
Ann
that?
Coulter.
We saw Ann Coulter on Fox News. I mean, I saw one of the most dramatic pieces of tape in the history of Ann Coulter's career. She got her legs taken out from under her last night, or I think it was Friday night on The Five, or was it Red Eye? I mean, she basically implied that Ronald Reagan bowed out of the race in 1976. She didn't imply it. She said it outright. And when one of the other folks on the show called her on it, she was completely caught off guard. Anyway, I taped it. I hit record. I don't know. I think Ann's losing it. And she should really be at the top of her game right now with the whole Mitt Romney thing going the way it is. But, that was pretty embarrassing, Ann. I don't know if she's off her medication or what, but she looked physically ill. And we don't wish that on Ann Coulter, certainly. Now, Donald Trump be a different story, but and Hugo Chavez, we're glad he's sick. We just hope he dies soon. But Ann Coulter, we don't wish her any physical malady, but she looked horrible. And she sounded even worse. I think she might be... I don't know. She might be on the verge of a breakdown or recovering from a breakdown. I don't know. But I have rarely seen someone caught in such an obvious fabrication
and then try to talk their way out of it, which she tried to do unsuccessfully. It was just embarrassing. I hope I have the ability to burn that onto a DVD and circulate it in the We Hate Ann Coulter Club that I'm the chairman and president of. And I use the word hate in the kindest way, not a deep-seated hatred where I'd like to, you know, like Hezbollah, where I want to carry out violent acts, but just a general disdain for Ms. Coulter, who, by the way, is probably banned from competing in the Miss Universe pageant, even though I think she's single. What's that?
Because she's a Miss.
Well, I wasn't going to say anything, but the Adam's apple, you know, it kind of, it leaves one suspicious. Let's just put it that way. Hey, you know, I hadn't thought about that, but this whole thing with the tranny, that could have officials at the Miss Universe pageant checking the sex of all the candidates. That could be shocking. What could be revealed there when you start looking at all these Miss Universe? They could be checking them, and then they could have that same team go into Fox News, start checking the identity and see who's naturally born what over there. All right. Now, speaking of degenerates, let's move to, where is this? This is Minneapolis. Through some clever legal wrangling, Twin Cities Pride, which is an organization that puts on the annual festival celebrating homosexuality there in Minneapolis-St. Paul, they've convinced the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board to allow them to exile anyone attempting to distribute Bibles or communicate unapproved messages at the event. They're going to make them put anyone who has a Bible or has one of those T-shirts that says, "Homos make me sick," they're going to put you in what they call a no-pride zone, which is going to be a fenced-off 10-by-10 area where they can put the sane people. The no-pride zone, which is going to be, off the beaten track from the festivities there at the Pride Festival. Now, Mr. Brian Johnson, who has been passing out Bibles at the Gay Pride Festival there in Minneapolis for a number of years, is filing a federal lawsuit against the Board of Homosexuals, claiming that they can't banish First Amendment free speech rights to a 10-by-10 square. During a major public event in which organizers have a non-exclusive permit to use the park. The Alliance Defense Fund is assisting Mr. Brian Johnson in trying to restore his free speech rights. He began attending the Pride Fest in 1995, and he still goes. I tell you what, I went with some preachers to one of these events one time, and never again will I ever do that. Well, first of all, my sidekick was physically attacked and had his teeth punched out of his face by a raging homosexual. And there were certain times where I thought I was going to be physically assaulted. And I decided that perhaps going to a crowd of 100,000 homosexuals on the day when they rabidly celebrate their deviant lifestyle, perhaps that's not the best witnessing opportunity. Anyway, but for those who do have the nerve to go and do that, they certainly have the right to do it. But the homosexuals in Minneapolis have established the no pride zone. Let's see here. Back in 2009, Twin Cities Pride denied Johnson's application for a booth. He had been getting a booth at the Pride Festival and handing out Bibles every year. Well, they denied him a booth. They confronted him and his family when they arrived at the park. Police showed up and arrested Mr. Johnson for trespassing. Now, the charges were eventually dropped, but then the Twin Cities Pride sued the park board themselves, seeking an injunction and a restraining order against Johnson distributing Bibles. Why are they so afraid of the Bible? None of them believe it's true. They all think it's a fairy tale. Oh, I know. They say that the Bible is used as a way of keeping homosexuals down, of degrading them, of damaging their self-esteem. They're so afraid of the Bible. They want to keep Mr. Johnson out. Let's see here. We've got a quote from the co-counsel to the homosexual deviant perverts at Pride Fest. Her name's Eileen. She argued that the board's refusal to stop Mr. Johnson she says, quote, would be akin to allowing the KKK to openly convey their racist and anti-immigration views at a Cinco de Mayo festival. Yeah. Well, you know what my problem is, Eileen? I don't think the homosexuals should be allowed to march openly and defile each other in the streets. How about that? Forget your argument, and don't be equating a bunch of deviant, pervert homosexuals marching down the street defiling one another to the good folks at a Cinco de Mayo festival. For crying out loud. Perhaps that's racist against our Mexican brethren, comparing these deviants to the Cinco de Mayo. Get out of here. I think that's offensive to the Ku Klux Klan, for crying out loud. All right, well, maybe not. I guess the Ku Klux Klan, you have to go a long way to be worse than the Ku Klux Klan. Yeah. Anyway, so there's that. The homosexuals, again. But this does prove the old axiom that if homosexuals come out of the closet, Christians will be forced into the closet. And they're doing it right there in Minneapolis. Well, we'll just see what happens with that story. My guess is, at the rate of deterioration of the nation, that the homos will probably win. Mr. Johnson will be banished. Or he'll have to set himself up in a bulletproof, like a Pope mobile or something, to go through the Pride Fest. What's the deal with pride anyway? That's why they don't like the Bible. Because the Bible warns us against pride. And so what do the homosexuals do? They take that as their banner and hold it up, pride, right in the face of God. Anyway, what's that?
And they took the rainbow, too.
And they took the rainbow, too. That was ours originally. Yeah, that's back in Genesis. Got to work on getting that back. All right. We've got another headline here from the New York Post. Deviant pervert found dead in his hotel. Why would that be shocking? It's in New York City. But apparently the new dead body of leftist God-hater Richard Descoings, who's a 54-year-old director of the allegedly prestigious Institute of Political Studies in Paris, it was discovered around 1 p.m. last week by staffers at the Michelangelo Hotel. Let's see here. Empty bottles of booze and antidepressants were also found in the room. There was no sign of forced entry, but sources say two men had visited the room earlier. Yeah. So this is, he was in New York, not surprisingly, to attend a Columbia University conference, was Mr. Descoings. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I had never heard of this guy before, but he's allegedly famous. He's a homosexual who's actually married to a woman. And she knew he was a homo, and she was cool with that. So there's the state of marriage in France, for crying out loud. Also, there's an independent report that in the hours and minutes before his death, Mr. Descoings was surfing. I don't know how to say this in a family-friendly manner. He was surfing what they call homosexual hookup sites. There was no sign of forced entry, but sources said that two men had visited the room earlier. Ooh, man, I need a shower after that story. Anyway, another leftist God-hater dead in New York City. And unfortunately, on his way straight to hell with jet rockets. And the reason is because so many people in his circle of friends, they stood around and said, you know, whatever you want to do, we're going to respect it. Whoever you think you are, that's fine. We're going to love you unconditionally no matter what. In fact, we'll celebrate what you do, and we'll even allow you to profess your pride in what you do. And Mr. Descoings ended up dead. Worldview, folks. We're rounding third and headed for home. So glad that you joined us this week. And we're going to jump into the war file now and get away from the deviants. Man, it's getting kind of gross. That was too much?
Yes.
Yeah, two of those in a row.
No, it was like five.
Was it really five? Well, the homeless, they're pouring out of the closet faster than I can keep track of. I apologize, ladies and gentlemen. Let's go to news that at least doesn't make your skin crawl. Let's go to Hillary's Friday the 13th party. Dateline Tehran, Iran. Iran's foreign minister said Istanbul remains an acceptable location for talks with world powers over Tehran's nuclear program, but noted last week that his country has proposed other venues, such as Iraq or China, for the negotiations that Hillary has scheduled to start this week. Yes, she expects talks to get underway on Friday the 13th, interestingly enough. Clinton said the proposed talks would not be an open-ended session and made clear that time is running out for a diplomatic accord over Iran's nuclear ambitions. The negotiations have also taken on urgency amid speculation that Israel or the U.S. could take military action against Iran later this year. This all from Newsmax. Hillary Clinton planning a big Friday the 13th bash with her buddies over in Iran. She still wants to talk. And for that, she should be probably deported, possibly arrested for wanting to negotiate with the Iranians. That's what you get. With Hillary. Really sad. Really sad to see that our political leaders, who've been foisted upon us, by the way, she was appointed by Barry, he's foisted upon us another unqualified progressive leader who is marching America headlong into destruction on many, many fronts. Very, very disturbing. Let's go back to Newsmax. Because they've got a story here about German Nobel laureate Günter Grass. Yeah, Günter Grass has published a poem entitled, What Must Be Said? Yes, that's the name of the poem, What Must Be Said? Yeah, Günter Grass, he says that Israel is a threat to, quote, already fragile world peace. Yeah, and he wrote a whole poem, I'm not going to go into it, but... He's basically saying that, you know, the Iranians, you know, they're all right. It's really the Jews. This what we always knew, it was the Jews that was the problem. And he's a Nobel laureate there in Germany. Israel, according to Newsmax, currently has three Dolphin submarines that they got from Germany. Two were entirely funded by Berlin. Yeah, Dolphin-class submarines. They're really neat. They can carry nuclear-tipped missiles. But there's no evidence that Israel has armed them with such weapons, nor shall there be any evidence until the day after they nuke Iran. Yeah. Günter Grass, Nobel laureate in Germany, said he long kept silent on Israel's own nuclear program because his country committed crimes that are without comparison. But he has come to see that silence is what he calls, quote, a burdensome lie and coercion. That's kind of creepy that you've got a very well-respected poet in Germany saying that, he's implying that tolerating Israel as a nuclear power, tolerating Israel, period, and not speaking out against Israel has become a burdensome lie and a coercion. Be careful, Mr. Grass. Things can get out of hand in Germany, as we've seen in the not-too-distant past. And so the march of anti-Semitism continues, relatively unabated, in fact celebrated, with a Nobel laureate poet in Germany with What Must Be Said About the Jews. All right, but let's get to some good news. There is some good news. The death penalty trial of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and four others accused of plotting the 9/11 attacks will resume next month at Guantanamo Bay. This is another story from Newsmax. Newsmax is representing this week. Good job over there at Newsmax. Now, there were five terrorists initially charged back in 2008, but the case was suspended, you'll remember, when President Barry Ho took office and wanted to move the trials to New York in a civilian court. We all remember that debacle. Well, these five terrorists, including Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, face a host of charges, including murder, attacking civilian objects, hijacking aircraft, and terrorism. An arraignment will be held at Guantanamo next month, and the five were held in secret CIA custody before being sent to Guantanamo back in 2006. Should have been summarily executed on the battlefield, in my humble opinion. And the fact that we have a six-year delay now, these men were captured in 2006. Here we are 6 years later. If I'm not mistaken, Mr. Mohammed has confessed, and we can't even put a trial together. So the jihadists have got to be laughing at us. I mean, why should they ever give up their fight against such a supine and incompetent leadership? They should be very confident in their chances of success, frankly, unless there's a major shift against the progressive ruling class marching us headlong toward destruction. And I just can't wait for this trial. I hope they let the military handle it, for crying out loud. Gloria Allred could show up. We'll find out Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's a tranny. She's going to defend him. All right, I'm getting a little punchy. Ay, ay, ay. All right. You know, you spend all day out petitioning. I've got to, whether you support personhood or not, if you're aging, I think you'd be able to relate to this. I'm standing out there. All I'm doing is holding a few clipboards in my hands and asking people to sign. And I do that for, I don't know, an hour, maybe 2 hours at a time. And at the end of the day, my fingers, my wrists, my elbows, my shoulders, my neck, and my lower back all hurt. And now I've developed some pain on the inside of my calves and thighs. I tell you what, getting old is rough. So, I mean, whether or not you support the effort or not, I hope you can at least commiserate with me, my physical maladies. I'm just really out of shape. Just really out of shape. All right, but I'm hoping the campaign will get me back in shape, gets me on my feet, gets me out there circulating among the people, you know. So perhaps the aches and pains will work their way out as we get through the aggressive personhood petitioning campaign. All right, now speaking of personhood, we've got a story out of the Telegraph in London. The Telegraph reports there are thought to be hundreds of women each year diagnosed with cancer while they are pregnant who face an agonizing decision over the best course of action. In some cases, women opt for an abortion, particularly when they are in the early stages of pregnancy and if the cancer is very aggressive. Others risk their own lives and risk their own survival by refusing treatment until after the baby is born. Well, a collection of research studies published in a special edition of the Lancet Medical Journal has offered reassurance for women, as it was found that chemotherapy treatments after the first trimester does not harm an unborn child. I remember when we first introduced personhood, one of the talking points that the baby killers used against us was that, well, if a woman gets cancer, you're going to make it so she can't get treatment because it could harm the baby. Well, just like so many other of their talking points, it's just a bald-faced lie. These studies are fairly significant. Let me go on with the Telegraph story. Up to 1 in 2,000 pregnancies is affected by cancer, and this rate is increasing by about 2.5% a year as women have children later in life, and cancer rates are rising. Well, the lead author on two of the studies said, quote, "The situation remains challenging since in some situations an advanced cancer can be fatal for mother and fetus." Importantly, he says, "the new insights we gained during our research facilitate cancer treatment and provide hope for mother and child in most cases. Most mothers feel stronger and are even more motivated to undergo cancer treatment and its side effects since she is fighting for her child as well as herself." And, you know, I know it's a terrifying situation, I think, to be in a situation where you and your baby could die and where treatment for you could affect the child. The good news is that an overwhelming majority of clinical data indicates that that the chemotherapy argument against personhood is just a red herring. It's not true. And it's also encouraging to see that these scientists, at least a few of them, are interested in both the mother and the child. I had thought that perhaps that had been banished from all medical practice, but apparently it's not. And that's somewhat encouraging. All right, now do we want to go to Santa Monica? No? Yeah, we went to Santa Monica. It was smoggy. Yeah, anyway, I could never live in L.A. But let's go to Santa Monica briefly. The Associated Press reports that campus police pepper sprayed as many as 30 demonstrators after Santa Monica College students, angry over the cost of courses, tried to push their way into a trustees meeting. Yeah, there's a video on the internet, according to the AP, showing students chanting, "No cuts, no fees, education should be free. No cuts, no fees, education should be free." Idiots. These people are being raped financially by the very college institutions that they worship at. And who are they mad at? They're mad at Wall Street. They're mad at the rich people. It's not the rich people, you ignorant children. It's the professors and the administration at the colleges who are robbing you people blind and then giving you degrees that are basically worthless, setting you up for a lifelong career in fast food. It's them you should be angry with, you ignorant children. Man, education should be free. Get out of here. Well, I tell you what, education shouldn't cost you $500,000 or $20,000 or $30,000 a year, whatever these poor idiots are being forced to pay. Anyway, just embarrassing. All right, from the Science Really file, a sweeping study of hundreds of families with autism has found that spontaneous mutations can occur in a parent's sperm or egg cells that increase a child's risk for autism. And get this, folks, fathers are 4 times more likely than mothers to pass these mutations on to their children. Anyway, we're coming to the end. I don't have time to expound on this, but I think that genetic mutations are directly related to the fall. Yes, the fall in the Bible. And perhaps, this is just a theory of mine, I mean, autism has increased exponentially in the last 15 or 20 years. And I'm wondering if perhaps undisciplined and untrained children are more susceptible to physical and psychological manifestations of these mutations. And perhaps these mutations have been there all along, but training and discipline help us to resist the breakdown of our physical and mental capacities that are related to the fall. I'm just throwing that out there. I'm just wondering. All right. Finally, ladies and gentlemen, from the Eagle in Wyoming, reported by the Associated Press, a remote unincorporated area along a rest area along Interstate 80 in Wyoming that advertised itself as the smallest town in America, Buford, Wyoming, was sold at an auction for $900,000 last Thursday. Now, its owner and the only person who lived in Buford, Don Sammons, he sold it for $900,000. Basically a truck stop along I-80. And it's a town, and he's been the mayor. And they have a sign that says Buford, population 1. Well, Mr. Sammons has sold his town. And he sold it to an unidentified buyer from Vietnam. So the one thing we can guarantee you is that in short order, the population of Buford will be a whole lot more than one. Because with the you know what's going to happen? The Vietnamese guy is going to go in there into the truck stop, and then his cousin's going to get hired, and his nephew and his niece, and then his in-laws are coming in. They're going to bring some people over from Vietnam. Then they're all going to have a bunch of kids. And who knows, a generation from now, Buford might be the biggest town in Montana. Anyway, that's all we've got, folks. Glad to have been with you this week. I want to thank my friends at KGOV, at Denver Bible Church, at Personhood USA, American Right to Life Theology Online, and of course, my other brother, Darrell, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back with you next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.